been gone 24 hours, but that's 23 hours too long. All right. Somebody better come out, Sprint. She's been gone 24 hours, and that's 23 hours too long.
Thank you. Would you like to take the sounds of your favorite radio station to places you never thought possible? Well, now you can, because WRCT is live on the internet. Just point your browser to www.wrct.org and click on our live MP3 broadcast. Now you can go out of town without any feelings of loss or regret for leaving us behind, because we're just a mouse click away. WRCT, live on the internet. Because why should Pittsburgh have all the fun?
The last 24 hours have been some of the craziest and most disturbing in many ways in the sort of news cycle that we've seen in weeks. And we're going to talk about the Sean Hannity text messages. We're going to talk about the Trump riot anniversary and Donald Trump canceling his press conference scheduled for tomorrow. But before we do any of that, I have what is one of the wildest interviews that I have seen, certainly in months. It is an interview that took place on MSNBC. Host Ari Melber interviewed Peter Navarro. Peter Navarro was Donald Trump's assistant. He was assistant to the president for a period of time. He was Trump's director of trade and manufacturing policy. He was the National Defense Production Act policy coordinator. And he is freely admitting that he was one of the planners of the attempted coup to steal an election that Donald Trump didn't win. I don't think we need really more introduction. I'm just going to get right into the material. Peter Navarro admits to the entire thing here. And it is, let's just get into the clips because there's just so much. This first clip is kind of the backstory. Why did Peter Navarro start developing with Trump this plan for a coup? Well, it was all based on false beliefs slash lies slash misunderstandings slash distortions. Let's start right there.
Sure. The backstory is while I was in the administration after the election, beginning on Thanksgiving, I produced what would be an exhaustive 3-volume report. I went over tens of thousands of pages of documents and proved that the election was in all likelihood stolen through fraud and election irregularities. That's the background. On January 6th,
That's false. But the question for the start of the interview.
We'll
yes, it is fine.
That,
but the question for the start of the interview is...
Now, Navarro says we'll disagree about whether the election really was or wasn't stolen. You have to put aside the disagreement to proceed, and Ari Melber ultimately does it. But everything is predicated on that. And so it's sort of the crucial point that that entire premise was untrue. Let's continue.
I just want to make sure here that we're kind of going by rules of the road. The question is,
you got to say that. And what I'm saying is that was
I don't have to say anything, sir. I'm asking you the question is, what was the plan itself and who was in on it?
Right.
Exactly. And I'm going to tell you that. The plan was simply this. We had over 100 congressmen and senators on Capitol Hill ready to implement the sweep. The sweep was simply that. We were going to challenge the results of the election in the 6 battleground states. They were Michigan, Pennsylvania, Georgia, Wisconsin, Nevada. And basically, these were the places where we believed that if the votes were sent back to those battleground states and looked at again, that there would be enough concern amongst the legislatures that most or all of those states would decertify the election.
Now, of course, that wasn't true. It didn't happen. There was no such evidence. But this is the same plan that was written up in the memo by Trump's lawyer. So it's all coherent. There's no doubt as to whether that was the plan. It was.
That would throw the election to the House of Representatives. And I would say to you here, Ari, that all of this, again, it was in the lanes legally. It was prescribed by the Constitution. There is a provision to go rather than through the Electoral College to the House of Representatives. And all this required was peace and calm on Capitol Hill. And at 1 p.m., Senator Ted Cruz and Gosar, a representative, started the Green Bay sweep beautifully.
So the premise here is, had it not been for the riots, they would have had a shot at carrying this plan forward, which is a new way that they are sort of denouncing the. Some of them are pretending there were no riots. Some of them are arguing that the riots were peaceful. In one sense, the riots were part of the plan as far as Trump was concerned. But some of these people who had what they thought was a more clever way to steal the election are saying, actually, the violence got in the way because it interrupted what we were going to do, have Pence reject electors, etc. Now we get to just an incredible part where Ari Melber straight up says to Navarro, you're describing a coup. Do you realize that? Take a look at this incredible video.
Rather than through the Electoral College to the House of Representatives. And all this required was peace and calm on Capitol Hill. And at 1 p.m., Ted Cruz, Senator Ted Cruz, and Gosar, a representative, started the Green Bay sweep beautifully, challenging the results of Arizona. Here's the most important thing I can tell you about this. The thing that we were trying to deal with was a media which refused to acknowledge any kind of possible fraud or irregularities.
Right. And well, let's get into it. I've given you some time here, and I think you've explained that. And I'm going to follow up here, and I want us to have a back and forth, but that involves both of us. You just described a way. Yeah, you just described this plan as a way to take an election where the outcome was established by independent secretaries of state, by the voters of those states, and legal remedies have been exhausted with the Supreme Court never even taking, let alone siding with, any of the claims that you just referred to. So legally, they went nowhere. And then you're describing a way that the incumbent... Hold on. You will get your turn. I just let you go for a while. Let's go this back and forth, sir. Then you will use the incumbent losing party's power, that was the Republican Party that was losing power, to overtake and reverse that outcome. Do you realize you are describing a coup?
No, I totally reject many of your premises there. First of all, the election was still in doubt and would be until it was certified. Second, the idea...
You cannot ever satisfy that, because he is saying the election is in doubt until it's certified. But his plan was to prevent its certification based on alleged doubts that he is raising. That can never be satisfied. You can never satisfy that. And Ari Melber is pointing out the crucial part. All of these independent individual secretaries of state in different states, many Republicans said there isn't evidence for this. So you check that off the list. Courts throughout, I think it was 63 different complaints that were made. Maybe one was sort of provisionally accepted on theoretical grounds, but courts did not find that their claims were with merit. The Supreme Court declined to take it up. So at a certain point, you can't say we are acting on the basis of X that justifies it, because every legal and sensible empirical remedy had been exhausted and had been rejected. And then he says, well, until it's certified, then it is in doubt. But you're the one preventing its certification. It's a circle.
That secretaries of state, particularly in Michigan and Pennsylvania, were like innocent parties. I mean, Jocelyn Benson and Kathy Bookfar, the secretaries of state in Michigan and Pennsylvania, they were put in power by George Soros for the express purpose of shifting the playing field.
Wow. Wow. So then lastly here, why wasn't Navarro more involved in pushing Mike Pence to do the thing they wanted him to do? Remember, Trump wanted Pence to reject this and to stop that and to seat a different slate of electors. And Navarro seems to say he was basically kept away from Mike Pence.
Conversation.
Why wouldn't he listen to you, do you think? Why wouldn't he listen to you?
Well, I talk about it in the In Trump Time book. His chief of staff, Mark Short, who is a Koch network conservative, meaning that he's a never Trumper, basically walled off Vice President Pence from the day Mark took chief of staff's duties back in 2018. And it was a sad story. Mike was always good to me until that day. The thing about Mike's betrayal of President Trump, wow, which is really interesting, is he never shared the legal analysis of his general counsel, Greg Jape,
right,
and Mark Short with Pat.
But again, that brings us back to the same point,
right?
And this may be relevant, sir, in future elections, which is, Don't you think somebody would have thought of this if the incumbent administration, through the president or the vice president, could just cancel the election outcome because he goes down to the Senate? Well, then a lot of people would try to stay in power. We have an entire system designed to thwart, and I want to say this respectfully, but it's the truth, people like you, to stop people like you who think that you can anoint yourself the reviewers of the voters, of the American people, of what they lawfully did, that you trump the Supreme Court, no pun intended. People like you are what the Constitution are designed to stop, and it worked, and it did stop you, which I guess brings us to, you know.
Incredible. I mean, truly incredible. He's admitting to the entire thing, and it was all based on their opinion, which was rejected or not corroborated by every Secretary of State that was pulled into it, by every court that was pulled into it, and ultimately the Supreme Court saying there's not even anything here for us, opting not to take this up, despite having three justices on it selected by Donald Trump. This is Exhibit A evidence, admitting to the entire thing, pulling together every aspect of it, every aspect of it. It's incredible. All right, let's now move on to the 1 year anniversary of the January 6th Trump riots. A year minus a day ago, being January 5th, this was January 6th of last year. Many of us, about 1.25 million of you, tuned in to pieces of my coverage of the Trump riots. It feels like it was yesterday. It's now been a year. In that year, we have seen hundreds of cases against the rioters move forward who were clearly Trump supporters. We have learned more about, yes, the plan, the expectation, the hope from Trump and Trumpists that this or anything would prevent the certification of Joe Biden's win on January 6th. And Donnie O'Sullivan, or Donnie, I forget exactly how it's pronounced. It's Donnie or Donnie from CNN. He's excellent. He went and interviewed Trumpists 1 year on from the Trump riots. Have they come around to reality in any way on what took place? Have they accepted that it was Trump people who did the rioting and Joe Biden did win the election? They have not. This is one of the most stunning. If there were a sociological time capsule to look at 1,000 years from now, this video should be on it. Let's jump right into it.
January 6th attack was not the Republicans nor Trump. It was the Democrats were behind it all. They're the ones that caused it all.
Do you really believe that?
I know it. And there is no way that a Republican would act that way. And there is no way that Trump had anything to do with what happened on January 6th.
This is the no true Scotsman fallacy. This is, by definition, the rioters couldn't have been Trumpists because no Republicans would ever do that. It's a closed loop. It's doxastic closure. It is an indefeasible statement. Call it whatever you want. You cannot reason people out of that belief because there is no reason as to why they hold it. You just can't do it. By definition, the rioters weren't Republicans because Republicans wouldn't riot. Wow. Strong statement.
But what about all the Trump supporters that have been charged and indicted?
Because it's all Democratic judges and people that were on the take from the Democrats.
It's been a year since the attack on the U.S. Capitol.
This is our Capitol!
And because of disinformation, denial, and diversion, Americans don't have a shared history, a shared understanding of what happened here on that day.
I think the whole reporting of it is a giant hoax. We are very peaceful people. So it was a total setup. To me, it was the FBI had set it up. I don't believe that they were Trump supporters that did that.
Right.
You said the whole thing's a setup. You don't really believe that, do you?
I do. Because Trump won the election. They've proven it over and over again.
I really don't think Trump had much to do with it other than people that were supporters for him. Some were involved, but I think they were enticed by the FBI.
This is why I say we have to take very seriously the possibility of something even worse in 2024. Listen to what these people are saying. There's no entry point to disabuse these folks of these false beliefs.
And by undercover agents.
Dear God.
When I spoke to Trump supporters here in Washington on January 6th, most were in denial about the results of the 2020 election.
Do you accept that Biden won the election?
Absolutely not. Biden did not win this election.
On January 6th, we walked with Trump supporters who marched from the White House, where Trump was doing his speech, here to the U.S. Capitol. And as we arrived here, that is when the first security barrier was breached. At the time, some Trump supporters told me they were happy with what happened here at the Capitol.
Are you proud of what happened here today?
Absolutely. I think we should have gone on in and yanked our senators out by the hair of the head and drug them out and said, no more.
Now understand that now they say no Republican would ever behave that way. Anyone who did that stuff wouldn't be a Republican. And yet a year ago, here a Republican saying we should go in there and drag senators out by their hair. So are these the people that are the fake Republicans?
I'm absolutely stand behind 100% what happened here today. 1,000%. I think it's terrible how this election was stolen.
Federal prosecutors have charged more than 700 people in connection with the Capitol riots and repeatedly documented the rioters' support for President Trump. But some people in right-wing media have pushed the dangerous idea that it was all an FBI plot.
FBI operatives were organizing the attack on the Capitol.
There is absolutely no evidence whatsoever that this was some kind of false flag event staged by the Democrats or the FBI. What would you say to people who say January 6th was the biggest attack on American democracy since the Civil War?
Absolute rubbish.
But amid all the denial and deflection, I met one Trump supporter who said it was important to be real about what happened on that day. What do you think of the Trump supporters that stormed the Capitol?
Oh, my. You talk about misfound feelings. Seeing the folks from my side of the state that were there, and they're not the part of the campaign that we would like to have.
Do you think some Trump supporters that say it's Antifa, it's Black Lives Matter, that they know that that's bullshit, but they just don't want to admit it's easier to blame someone else?
Everyone is afraid to, you know, take the blame.
So that last point is an important one, and we've talked about it before. Do these Trumpists literally believe that Trump won and that the rioters were Antifa and the FBI, or is it something they say to signal that they're on the team and they accept that sometimes in a war, you've got to tell lies or whatever because of the greater good? We don't really have the answer to the question. The answer is probably some of them really do believe it, but some of them understand that in order to show that I'm on the team, it's what I've got to say. 1 year later, and it is as bad as it has ever been, which should really scare us about 2024. Let's take a quick break. You can find me on Twitter at @dpacman and let me know your thoughts about these incredible videos. Remember that you can sign up and get a membership to the David Pacman Show at joinpacman.com. Not only are memberships our primary source of funding, very, very important as we are now in an election year, you also get a bunch of great perks, including an extra show every day that we do called The Bonus Show, commercial-free audio and video streams of the show, priority access to viewer town halls, and so many other great things. Sign up at joinpacman.com. You can use the coupon code WOW22. WOW22. It's an impressive discount code. Okay, the Trump Riot Committee wants to talk to Fox News propagandist Sean Hannity. And why wouldn't they? I mean, at the end of the day, this is not a big shock. Sean Hannity became, I don't know if we can say friend. Trump doesn't really seem to have friends in the way you or I might use the term. But he became a colleague or associate of Donald Trump's, regularly talking to Donald Trump, and clearly was involved as the riots and the attempt to steal the election were going on. The House committee investigating the riots now wants to talk to Sean Hannity, and they've released some text messages that are stunning, not in that Hannity is suggesting crazy things, but in that it makes clear that Hannity knew what was being done was a bad idea. But then he went on to tell lie after lie after lie about the 2020 election on his show and about the January 6th, 2021 riots on the program. Axios reporting. January 6th committee requests Sean Hannity's cooperation. They have requested Fox News Channel host Sean Hannity voluntarily cooperate with the investigation. Hannity's one of the most prominent media figures in America, was a close advisor to Trump throughout his presidency. The committee revealed last month that Hannity texted then White House Chief of Staff Mark Meadows during the riot to urge him to get Trump to stop his supporters. Hannity condemned the attack on the Capitol, saying on his show on the night after the riot that all of today's perpetrators must be arrested or prosecuted. But Hannity has never criticized Trump for his role in ginning up the crowd in D.C. that day, and he has criticized the congressional committee investigating January 6th. Article from the Daily Beast revealed Sean Hannity's other desperate texts about January 6th. "I'm very worried about the next 48 hours," he texted Mark Meadows hours before a MAGA mob's violent attack on the Capitol. "We can't lose the entire White House counsel's office," Hannity wrote to Meadows on December 31st, 2020. "I do not see January 6th happening the way he is being told. After the 6th, he should announce we'll lead the nationwide effort to reform voting integrity. Go to Florida, watch Joe mess up daily, stay engaged. When he speaks, people will listen." It's not terrible advice from Sean Hannity. It's not what Trump ultimately did. But the committee wrote to Hannity that that message, quote, "suggests that you had knowledge of concerns by Trump's White House counsel's office regarding the legality of the former president's plan for January 6th. January 5, 2021. "I'm very worried about the next 48 hours. The committee further asks Hannity, "Why were you concerned about the next 48 hours? Incredible that the public facing stuff Hannity was doing reflected 180-degree different perspective on what did and was taking place than what Hannity was texting behind the scenes. Same could apply to Laura Ingraham, as we've talked about before. Here is Adam Schiff appearing on MSNBC yesterday, asked, "You're looking for info and cooperation from Hannity?" And Adam Schiff says, "Yes, we are."
"Are you looking for information or for cooperation from Mr. Hannity?"
"Yes, and I think you'll see an announcement about that very soon. We believe that he was texting with the chief of staff, and that he has information that would be relevant to our committee. He was more than a Fox host. He was also a confidant, advisor, campaigner for the former president. And I would hope that if he's asked by the committee, as I expect he will be very soon, that he would cooperate with us."
Unclear if that will actually happen. Congresswoman Lofgren was also asked about, Zoe Lofgren asked about why Hannity, and she says, "Well, we have dozens of texts from Hannity. Take a look at this."
"Activity. He is a fact witness. We have in our possession dozens of texts that he sent to Mark Meadows and others in his role as apparent political operative, indications of his communications with the president and others on strategy. And it's that that we would like to talk to him about. Want to make sure that everyone knows this isn't a subpoena. We've asked him to cooperate with us as a fact witness out of his sense of patriotism."
Yeah, well, good luck with that. So we'll see if Hannity does show up. Another very interesting text that was published by CNN's Brian Stelter, highlighted by Brian Stelter relatively early on, quote, "Guys, we have a clear path to land the plane in 9 days. This was 9 days before Biden was sworn in. He can't mention the election ever again, ever." And clearly Hannity saw, even if not out of a moral duty to say Trump's got to stop this stuff, out of a strategic duty to the Republican Party, Hannity saying he's got to stop with the election. We can land the plane. He can go to Florida, criticize Biden, but stop talking about the election. Obviously, that's not ultimately what happened. And this all makes Hannity's promotion of lies, conspiracy theories and the like even more vile, even more dishonest, even more immoral. I don't expect Hannity to cooperate with the committee, but let's see if he does. Quick note, I don't want to spend a ton of time on this, but Donald Trump has decided to cancel the event that he had planned for tomorrow. Trump was going to do a press conference at Mar-a-Lago, his Florida resort, tomorrow, January 6, 2022. the one-year anniversary of the Trump riots on January 6, 2021. He has now canceled that. Maggie Haberman from The New York Times says that, quote, among other things, several advisors, formal and informal, told Trump the press conference was a mistake and it was becoming clear he wasn't likely to get the live TV coverage that he was hoping for. So there's actually two interpretations of Trump's decision to cancel this. One is he realized there's no way to spin what happened last January 6th in any way that would be remotely advantageous to him. That's one possibility. Trump's ego tends to push in the other direction, which is I can always spin anything to be good for me. So the other interpretation is Trump got word that the major networks were not going to be carrying that press conference live and decided it wasn't going to get the publicity that he wanted. And that really does anger the guy. So that has been canceled. Important, Donald Trump will be appearing at a rally in the state of Arizona, not this Saturday, but next Saturday, January 15th. And he has put out a statement saying that then he will offer his thoughts on what happened on January 6th. So he'll eventually speak about it. But rather than being in front of what was destined to be a small television audience, he will do it in front of a live audience on January 15th. We'll have more information about that. That may also get canceled, but the January 6, 2022 press conference Trump had planned for tomorrow at Mar-a-Lago is canceled. Make sure you're following the David Pakman Show on Instagram at David Pakman Show. We're going to take a very quick break and be right back. All right. We have two more of these, quite frankly, very sad stories about COVID deaths, even though these are what some people call justice in some way. I still find these very sad. Let's start with the first one. A dozen or more of you emailing me this. Deputy district attorney who opposed vaccine mandates has died from COVID at 46 years old. Kelly Earnby was a Republican. She ran for California State Assembly in 2020. She said, there's nothing that matters more than our freedoms right now at a rally against vaccine mandates last month. She is now dead. This was the Orange County Deputy District Attorney, Kelly Earnby, California Republican activist, opposed vaccine mandates of all kinds. Her boss, District Attorney Todd Spitzer, announced her death on Facebook. Quote, the Orange County District Attorney's office is utterly heartbroken by the sudden and unexpected passing of Deputy District Attorney Kelly Earnby. Kelly was an incredibly vibrant, passionate attorney who cared deeply about the work that we do as prosecutors and deeply about the community we all fight so hard to protect. Ben Chapman, chair of the Greater Costa Mesa Republicans, praised Earnby as an inspiration and confirmed she died from COVID complications. My heart is broken and I'm in tears, wrote Ben. I lost a dear friend to COVID complications. Earnby ran an unsuccessful campaign for California State Assembly in 2020. In December, she spoke against vaccine mandates at a rally organized by the right-wing student group Turning Post USA. Now, I actually don't know if that's an error and they meant Turning Point USA. I was not able to find that definitively. But in any case, she, in speaking against all vaccine mandates, said there's nothing that matters more than our freedoms right now. 46 years old, and she has died of COVID. And it is just another one of these reminders that, listen, I'm with you and the science in saying this disproportionately is hitting older people. This disproportionately is hitting unhealthy people. Obesity is a big risk factor, number of other things. But when you've got a bell curve distribution, or even in this case, what may be a Pareto distribution skewed towards the older and the people with comorbidities, when you have a planet of nearly 8 billion people, you're going to get random, younger, in some cases, perfectly healthy people that are going to die. And if it were me, I don't want to take that chance. My dad the other day sent me a great analogy to winter tires, which is, you know, sometimes all season tires are perfectly fine, even in winter. Sometimes you can go an entire winter and it doesn't even snow in the Northeast or places where it snows. Sometimes it can snow and you've got the all season tires and you slip, but you don't crash. But wouldn't you rather still have the winter tires? Because there might be a situation where they really do protect you and prevent you from getting into an accident. That's really the perspective on the vaccination stuff. So 46-year-old Earnby has died of COVID. And we have another one of these stories that in some sense is even more bizarre. So this next story, I know it's going to be hard for a lot of people to see beyond the physical appearance of the individuals that we're talking about. There are twin anti-vaccine brothers, the Bogdanov twins, who were actually of memetic fame. They were like crypto meme figures in cryptocurrency related memes. Both of these brothers, whose physical appearance is bizarre, and we'll talk about that in a moment, they both died of COVID unvaccinated within days of each other. Now, if you're not familiar with these individuals, these are Grichka and Igor Bogdanov. They were known for a couple of different things. To some, they were known for their placement. They figured prominently in cryptocurrency related memes. To others, they were known as having what appears to be bizarre plastic surgery. If you look at pictures of these individuals decades ago, they look completely different. They, as far as I know, denied having plastic surgery. As you can see, you know, they have these cheekbones that are so bulbous that according to an Australian newspaper, they, quote, threaten their own vision. Extremely controversial and strange looking individuals. They obtained doctorates by writing what are considered allegedly meaningless physics papers. They claim to be descendants of nobility, et cetera, et cetera. They're both dead of COVID. They're both dead of COVID. The Daily Beast writes, their voyage through the stars ended in a Parisian hospital where both Grichka and Igor Bogdanov had been admitted on the same day after contracting COVID. Grichka, the younger twin, died in ICU on December 28th. Igor followed him on Monday. Both were 72 years old. A source close to the brothers told the French media outlet Le Monde that neither had been vaccinated against the virus. It is, you know, you can read about these individuals if it's interesting to you, but it is another one of these stories. Both unvaccinated, both dead of COVID. And I don't, you know, but particularly in this case, because of their appearance and the entire sort of cult of personality around them, a lot of people are just laughing at this. I really don't find it funny. It's just sad. It's sad. And the vaccine doesn't protect anyone 100%. Colin Powell, very immunocompromised, but had the full regimen of vaccines, died from COVID or COVID complications. It doesn't protect everyone. But don't you want a better shot? Don't you want a better shot? If the suit of armor is available and you're going to walk through a forest where arrows are going to be fired, you might never confront an arrow. They might go whizzing next to you. They might never actually hit you. But wouldn't you rather the suit of armor if there are going to be arrows flying? That's my view. And many of you know that already. But the Bogdanov twins, the crypto meme twins, both dead of COVID within days of each other. And in the next segment, I'm going to tell you about my confrontation with COVID. A lot of people, I teased this like 10 days ago, and people have been writing saying, David, what's the deal with that? I wanted to wait to have what was hopefully the full story. I believe I have it now, and I'm going to be talking about that after the break. Make sure you're following me on Instagram at david.pakman. You can also follow the show on Facebook, facebook.com/davidpakmanshow. We'll take a break. We will be right back. One of the things that kind of pervades much right-wing ideology, at least in the United States, is seemingly simple, obvious ideas that everybody should clearly hear and immediately say that makes sense and adopt, which require no real deep thought of any kind. And these include things like, hey, it's your money after all. Why should you be taxed? It's your money and you should get to keep it. Well, that's pretty simple. I don't know. It makes sense. Of course, the real world is far more complicated. Hey, listen, I mean, we've got a Second Amendment. And so that's it. You just, people can have whatever guns and well, but hold on a second. Let's actually think more deeply about some of these issues. And when it comes to things like unemployment, welfare benefits, social insurance, there's this attitude from the right that's often based on the concept of people just got to stop being lazy and just like go and do stuff. Go and do stuff. You need more money, get a better job. Just go do stuff. Don't rely on other people. Don't be lazy. All of these different things. And along these lines, a very popular meme that now is being repeated very uncritically on Fox News and in other right wing media is, as Omicron spreads wildly and some health agencies in different states, countries, et cetera, are saying employers should be prepared for up to 25% of their workforce at any given time to be out because of either a COVID diagnosis or a COVID exposure that requires some degree of isolation. They are saying just go to work, go to work. And we have the epitome of hypocrisy here from Fox News's Brian Kilmeade. The Fox and Friends crew appears to be hosting Fox and Friends, each alone in studios. Now, we can't tell whether these are all even Fox studios or some are home studios. There are people on other networks who have set up a room in their home with a big TV screen behind them, and it looks like they're in the studio, but they're really at home. We don't know. But Brian Kilmeade, while he is co-hosting Fox and Friends alone in a studio rather than on the couch with his co-hosts for any of a variety of different reasons, is telling other people, just go to work and live with COVID. Just get out there. What are you doing trying to be at home, trying to be out from work? Pretty convenient when you can just get your own studio or whatever it is that he's doing. All right, let's take a look at the video here.
And I want to make it clear, too, that I met so many teachers, and Ainsley, your sister's teacher and your mom was teacher. And I met so many teachers. I went to about 18 cities over the last 2 months. And what? So many people say, I know Fox doesn't like teachers. I go, no, you got it all wrong. Fox is in awe of teachers. The unions that are in control, that they're forced to join in order to get a job, that's the issue. But guess what has changed? You know what it used to be? It used to be us on the couch. It used to be almost every Republican political leader, almost everyone, saying, go get the kids back in school. And the Democrats get in charge, and it's like, no, we need money to get schools ready and 6 feet apart, and then we get plexiglass in order to get, and now all of a sudden things have changed. If you see the new mayor of New York City, if you see Lori Lightfoot of Chicago, if you see what is happening in Los Angeles, everywhere you go in Massachusetts, the moderate governor, a Republican governor who has really gone liberal on so many different causes, is now pushing back, all on the same page, saying kids need to be in school. And guess the only people standing in the way are teachers' unions. The kids need to be in school. The parents need to be teaching in school. The mayor's saying get into school. The governors are saying get into school. The president's saying get into school. Dr. Fauci said get to school. They're the only thing stopping. These kids are going to have.
Now, remember, all along, everybody said it would be better for kids to be in school. There was a point at which it would have been outrageous to do it. And schools we're getting to the main thing. Even this week, some schools are saying we're going to go remote for a week or 2 weeks and try to get past this Omicron surge. But let's continue.
Their learning curve forever curtailed unless something happens quickly. And this should be our mantra from here on in. Let's not get caught up in the daily nuances of what doctor's in and what's out. It's called live with it. Go to work. Live with it. Go to get on a train, get on a bus, get on a plane. How do we live with it? We can no longer hide from it. That's the 10-day to 5-day rule. Now, listen, in the real world, there's parents that have to deal with remote learning until they can get control of their kids' education.
Now, there's some degree to which Kilmeade is not wrong in that we are literally going to have to learn to live with it one way or the other. How some people live with it is going to be different than how other people live with it. The most optimistic scenario is we've got another 7 to 10 days, maybe, of this Omicron surge, and then a decline, meaning in 7 to 10 days, we'll be back where we are now. And in another 7 to 10 days, we'll be to where we were 7 to 10 days ago. And hopefully 6 weeks from now or so, things are looking here the way they are looking in South Africa now. That would be the ideal trajectory. But then the best case scenario is this thing becomes endemic and it will be roughly this severe for a period of time. And hopefully over time, the number of cases gets down to, you know, what would be sort of a steady, predictable level, the way flu sort of is, although there's better flu seasons and worse flu seasons. We know that. And it continues to mutate because of evolutionary pressure that generally makes these things less severe over time rather than more in the less severe direction. So there is a degree to which we have to live with it. We are in the middle of the biggest spike. Fox and Friends are each sitting by themselves in a studio as he is saying, get on a bus, go to school, go here. Teachers go in, go even when you have a lot of kids still unvaccinated. Very easy and hypocritical for him to say that. And it's, you know, it was the AOC, the thing they were saying about AOC going to Miami, which we talked about, rules for thee and not for me. He's telling everybody else, get on public transit and just go to your job. Where he is, you know, we can't tell. He may be working from home or isolated in a studio, probably gets a chauffeured ride into the studio, or at least it's available. I don't know if he's taking it. You know, we're sort of guessing here. This is sort of a rules for thee and not for me sort of thing. And just a complete disconnect from the reality of what's actually going on in the world. And if businesses have 25% of workers out, you don't think that cripples businesses in a serious and significant long-term way? So it's not just hypocrisy, it's virtue signaling as well. And we should all be really skeptical about accepting the stuff that these people tell us. All right, so here's the deal. My girlfriend got COVID. We have no idea how. And somehow I didn't get it. And we have no idea how. So I've been waiting to tell this story because I really wanted to be sure I didn't get it. And I wanted to be able to tell you the full story with some definition. So this now goes back a period of time, but I'm going to lay it out for you the way that that it all is. Let's call it. I'll just use day numbers. OK, day one, she wakes up with a sore throat. We say, let's see what's going on. We both take rapid tests and are both negative. And we just hang out at home for the remainder of that day. By the end of the day, she's feeling fine. Wakes up on day two, says, my symptoms are gone. Had a sore throat. It's gone. I'm feeling fine on day two. End of day two, she says, I think I'm still feeling fine, but I'm just really weirdly tired. I don't know, a little bit of a headache. Okay. We go to day three. Wakes up. She says, my sore throat is back. I'm feeling worse. I've got a headache. Let's go and actually get PCRs. Go get PCR tests, told, you know, it's going to be 24 to 48 hours before you get the result. Later on day three, she develops a fever. So now we've got sore throat and fever and a little bit of headache. I feel fine. We're waiting on the PCR results, but she's got fever. We go to day four. Day four still has fever, using Tylenol to manage it. I still feel fine. Now, at this point, we're assuming this actually could be COVID. Maybe the rapid test on day one was just too early. Day four, we get the PCR back and it says negative. Everybody's still negative. Now, that was taken on day three, what would be considered day three of symptoms. You know, day two, the symptoms went away, but it's probably day three of symptoms. PCR is still negative. Day four still has a fever. Fever starts climbing 101, 102. I still feel fine because she has the negative PCR. I'm thinking, well, this is something else. We don't really have to worry. We're sharing a thermometer. We're sharing food. We are, you know, I drove her in the car to get the PCR tests. We're sleeping in the same bed. Yeah, okay, day four, fever is still there. Day four at night, the fever seems to go away. Day five, she wakes up. I still feel fine. She wakes up and she says, my fever's gone. I'm less feeling like I'm sick. My throat is about 50% better. Maybe it's going away. All right, fair enough. But then on day five, she develops a cough, and it's not a good cough. This is the cough. It's what would be called in the industry a productive cough. It's a bad cough. I still feel fine, other than at this point, I'm having what some people call it a phantom a phantom headache and sore throat. Some people would call it a Jewish neuroticism headache and sore throat. Some of you will understand what that means. But I don't really have symptoms, but I'm kind of like, do I feel something? So now we're on day five. And because we, you know, still getting negative COVID tests, negative PCR, negative, the sore throat, she says, could this be strep? Could this be flu? Fever's gone, sore throat, that productive cough is here. So we say, well, we need to get a flu test and we need to get a strep test. I'm still feeling fine. We're not isolating. We're in the car driving to get the strep and flu, et cetera, et cetera. She gets tested for everything. Day five at night, gets a call back and they did another PCR just to be sure. You know, they test for RSV, other viruses, flu, strep, et cetera. They say, ma'am, you're negative for everything except COVID. You have COVID. And she says, really? I had, you know, multiple negative rapids, negative PCR, et cetera, et cetera. They say, no, it's definitely COVID and you should be, she says, do I need to isolate from my partner, my boyfriend? We live together. And the doctor says, yeah, you really should. So at that point, I'm just kind of thinking, if I didn't get it yet, I'm not going to get it, right? But day five, you can still be contagious, even though she's had 24 hours without a fever. And this is where it kind of gets to these mixed messages. We have the new CDC guidance and the old CDC guidance. If you're without fever for 24 hours and it's been 5 days, in theory, you're all good. But are you really? Do we know? What about Omicron? All this different stuff. So we start isolating and we isolate for 3 days. Sleep in separate rooms and, you know, wear masks in the house when we pass each other. I really don't want to get this thing. And OK, I had 5 days of exposure day after day after day, sharing food, sharing thermometers, sharing. But we'll just isolate for the 2-3 additional days. At that point, you know, she gets to day 9 and still has the nagging cough, but is otherwise mostly better. And at that point, I say, I think I beat it. I think with the 3 doses, clearly I was exposed. I was exposed in the 2 days before she was symptom. In theory, I was exposed on day -1 and 0, because that's when you're believed to be most contagious. And I was exposed on days 1, 2, and 3, when you're believed to be most contagious. And I was exposed on days 4 and 5, during which you're in general believed to be less I just didn't get it. Now, could I have had an asymptomatic case? Yes, one that was both asymptomatic and was negative on rapid and PCR tests. Now, you might say, well, did you do subsequent PCR tests? I did. On day 7, we both did additional PCR testing. She was still positive. I was still negative. On day 9, we both did rapid tests. She was we were both negative by that point in time. So I don't know. I don't have an explanation. You know, it's I don't know that we will ever really get an answer other than maybe it's as simple as the vaccine worked. The vaccine, which when you have 3 doses, even against Omicron, believed to be 75% effective against symptomatic disease. I mean, this was not passing exposure that I had, I think, is the point I'm trying to make. We were in the car driving back and forth from testing into the hospital or the urgent care, whatever, the different places to get PCRs. And we were, you know, in the same room and sharing food. I was clearly exposed. And apparently I had the neutralizing antibodies were activated and I somehow ended up not getting sick. You know, you hear about people across the hall from someone in a hotel isolating, one person has COVID. It, you know, Nicholas Christakis told us about this story. The person across the hall gets it. It can be that contagious. I feel like I dodged a bullet. Somehow 5 days of constant exposure, really 7 days, if you include the 2 days prior to symptoms, 7 straight days of full exposure. And I didn't get it. Unfortunately, because we both work from home, it didn't create any kind of disruption in terms of work or anything like that. But that's my story. And you now know everything I know. And the reason I kept waiting to tell the story was in my head. I was like, OK, what if I tell the story now about how I didn't get it? and then somehow, like, she's still contagious on day 14, and then it incubates for 5 days, and I end up with it on day 19. You know, these on the edges of the bell curve scenarios, it's now been long enough. It's been, you know, 3 weeks that I'm feeling pretty good that if I were to get it now, it wouldn't be from that. Now, where did she get it? We have no idea. First of all, we basically both have been doing the exact same stuff. We go to the same places. We don't do any indoor dining. We're not going to the movie theater. We're not going to sporting events. We're not doing any of that stuff. We didn't really have any indoor unmasked contact with anybody other than a car ride with my brother, who also hadn't done anything, had no symptoms, had no positive test before, after, or during. Is it possible that this is so contagious that some of those other means could potentially give you the virus? There was an instance where when we were outdoor dining, she went into the restroom with a mask on. Could there have been a surface thing there? Grocery store. I mean, we really have no idea. And presumably, not only did I not get it from her, but we were both exposed to wherever she got it. And I still didn't get it. So I don't know, folks. I don't know. But it is very, very wild times. And that's the full story as I understand it right now. We have a voicemail number. That number is 219-2-DAVID-P. I have talked about my disdain for kids' menus. Here is someone who misunderstood my comment and isn't pleased with me. Take a listen to this.
Hey, David. Robert Asher from St. Louis. First-time caller.
Yes.
Want to talk to you a lot about various Trump-related things and my arguments on Facebook with my friends. But you were doing a thing about Applebee's, and you talked about kids' menus just being what the adults eat, but in smaller portions, as if that were a bad thing. But isn't that what a kid's menu is supposed to be?
Yes. So you misunderstood. My point was, I am vehemently against what has become the de facto American kids menu. You go to a steakhouse, or you go to a burger bar, or you go to a noodle shop, or you go to even some Asian or Indian restaurants, and the kids menu is the same thing. It's grilled cheese, noodles with butter, chicken fingers with fries, no matter where you go. I'm against that. What I mean by the kids menu is smaller portions of what the adults eat is. Kids should just be having smaller portions of what the adults eat. You know, these stereotypes, oh, kids don't like fish. Well, they don't like it because a lot of Americans don't give kids fish until they're seven. And by then they've not developed a taste for it. All over the world, Thailand, Japan, Argentina, Spain, kids are having shellfish and fish all the time. And that's what it is. Oh, kids don't like spicy. Well, in India and Pakistan and Thailand and China, kids are having modestly spicy stuff all the time. So my point is, I like the idea that you don't really need a discrete kids menu, because it's just be the kids eat smaller portions of what the adults are having. That's not what is the kids menu in most places. I'm against the grilled cheese, pasta, chicken fingers kids menu. Please, let's understand what I am saying. That's my point. All right, we have a great bonus show for you today. The Mayo Clinic has fired 700 employees because they are not vaccinated. 700 employees. December job growth doubled the expected numbers. Doubled. That sounds like a great economy. Well, we're going to dig into the numbers and think about it a little more deeply. And a father and son plead guilty to Trump riot charges. It runs in the family, folks. And I'm sort of joking when I say that, but it really does. It really does. So we will talk about all of those stories and more on today's bonus show. Tomorrow's live stream of the Trump press conference is canceled because the press conference is canceled. We will have other live streams this week. And next Tuesday, January 11th, 6 p.m. Eastern, we'll be doing a very casual chess tournament. Players of all levels are welcome. This is a great community thing. Last time we did it, I think we had 500 or 600 players. It was great. Some grandmasters, international masters, women's FIDE masters are going to be participating in the tournament. I hope that you will participate. It'll be January 11th at 6 p.m. Eastern. Just make an account on chess.com and then I'll have information about how to sign up. It's free. I'm selling you nothing, folks. It's completely free to play, and I hope that you will. All right, we'll see you on the bonus show. Sign up, get a membership at joinpacman.com, which will give you instant access to the bonus show.
DJ Haim from Forest, and you're listening to 88.3 WRCT.
WRCT, the insane from way out.
Depose from the faint. Do you think I'm hot? You're listening to WRCT Pittsburgh.
Hello, my fellow Americans. I would just like to say now, as an expert on the subject, that WRCT Pittsburgh does not blow. Thank you.
Hey there, folks. Glad you could join me for all the best, the smoothest of the smooth, the cool and gentle sounds of what we call jazz.
Tired of the fluffy stuff? At WRCT Pittsburgh, jazz is a one-syllable word.
Nuclear Holocaust. It's a very serious problem, and one that faces all of us. Fortunately, here at WRCT Pittsburgh, we broadcast from a steel-reinforced concrete basement. So we'll be playing music long after your sorry corpse has evaporated in a blinding flash of light and heat. I hope this thought comforts you. WRCT Pittsburgh, 88.3 FM.
WRCT Pittsburgh, meaty and full of flavor since 1940.
For those of you concerned with your health and the new USDA organic product standards, WRCT Pittsburgh would like to inform you that all our DJs are genetically modified to bring you best music.
Yo, what's up? How y'all doing out there in Technoland? RCT Techno DJs in the house. Oh yeah, bringing you the only fat beats in Pittsburgh. Right here on WRCT Pittsburgh, 88.3 FM.
Holocaust. It's a very serious problem, and one that faces all of us. Fortunately, here at WRCT Pittsburgh, we broadcast from a steel-reinforced concrete basement. So we'll be playing music long after your sorry corpse has evaporated in a blinding flash of light and heat. I hope this thought comforts you. WRCT Pittsburgh, 88.3 FM. Now and forever.
Depose from the faint. Do you think I'm hot? You're listening to WRCT Pittsburgh.
Would you like to take the sounds of your favorite radio station to places you never thought possible? Well, now you can, because WRCT is live on the internet. Just point your browser to www.wrct.org and click on our live MP3 broadcast. Now you can go out of town without any feelings of loss or regret for leaving us behind, because we're just a mouse click away. WRCT, live on the internet. Because Why should Pittsburgh have all the fun?
WRCT, the in sound from way out.
From New York, this is Democracy Now! One year ago today, January 6, 2021, the deadly attack on the U.S. Capitol took place. A violent right-wing mob, incited by President Trump, stormed the U.S. Capitol in what's been described as an attempted coup. Attorney General Merrick Garland has vowed to continue investigating and prosecuting those who organized the insurrection.
The Justice Department remains committed to holding all January 6 perpetrators at any level accountable under law.
Will Garland do what it takes to bring the insurrectionists to justice? We'll speak with the nation's Ellie Mistel. And as false claims about voter fraud fuel Republican efforts to restrict voting access, especially for black voters, we'll go to Georgia to speak with Professor Carol Anderson, author of White Rage and One Person, No Vote. We'll also look at the lead up to the insurrection and what followed with Just Security's Ryan Goodman and Newsweek's William Arkin.
There's still so much we don't know about January 6th. About who the people were who were there, about what the link is to Donald Trump. And to me, like, understanding who these people were is the key to our moving forward and improving and enhancing our democracy.
All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Today is the first anniversary of the January 6th deadly insurrection when supporters of Donald Trump attacked the Capitol in a bid to overturn the 2020 election. President Joe Biden and Vice President Kamala Harris are addressing the nation today. White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki said Biden will lay out, quote, the singular responsibility President Trump has for the chaos and carnage that we saw, unquote. On Wednesday, Attorney General Merrick Garland vowed to continue investigating the insurrection. He said so far, 725 rioters have been arrested and charged.
The Justice Department remains committed to holding all January 6 perpetrators at any level accountable under law, whether they were present that day or were otherwise criminally responsible for the assault on our democracy. We will follow the facts wherever they lead.
In related news, Trump's former press secretary, Stephanie Grisham, met Wednesday with the House Select Committee investigating the insurrection. Former President Jimmy Carter has issued a stark warning on the anniversary of the Capitol insurrection. In an op-ed in the New York Times, the 39th president warns about right-wing attacks on the country's electoral system and the spread of disinformation. Carter writes, quote, our great nation now teeters on the brink of a widening abyss. Without immediate action, we're at genuine risk of civil conflict and losing our precious democracy, unquote. Jimmy Carter is now 97 years old, the longest living former president in U.S. history. We'll spend the hour looking at the January 6th insurrection after headlines. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention has endorsed giving Pfizer booster shots to children between the ages of 12 and 15 as COVID cases continue to skyrocket amidst the Omicron surge. The United States has reported an average of nearly 600,000 new COVID infections a day over the past week, by far the highest anywhere in the world.